Live from Sacramento, California.
Woke up quick at about noon.
Featuring Damian Barling.
Yes, I absolutely still love Russell Westbrook. So what?
And Kenny Caraway.
Sometimes you're really just vibing out.
This is D-Lo and KC.
I'm the street's voice out west. Legendary self-made progress. Last time that I checked.
On ESPN 1320.
And we are thrilled that you are here with us on this Tuesday, October 6th. I'm Damian Barling along with Kenny Caraway. And we have got plenty to get to, including our week four power rankings, the prestigious. D'Lo and KC power rankings coming up at 12:30. Obviously, you don't want to miss that. We'll get into the Monday night doubleheader that we had last night.
You know, Damian, not to cut you off, but I mean, I've long been in favor of a Monday night doubleheader, just like they do on week one. Would you be in favor of doing that every week?
Not a fan.
No.
I didn't like it. I didn't like it because I'm a routine guy.
Okay.
And I didn't like that. Like, I was still working in the, I was still working here in the studio. It was
yesterday was a mess.
I was trying to get sound from Kyle Shanahan. I was like, wait, what time? Like, there's a game on.
Yeah.
Yesterday
was whack. I don't like that format where they start like an hour apart from each other. I like the week one format where it's game one at 4, game two at 7.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I don't really like the Monday night because normally, like, I'm over it by then. Like, that's the whole point of Monday night. You got one game, you get to stay to yourself. I suppose that's, like, hypocritical because the biggest night in basketball is Thursday, the TNT doubleheader. You get two games, you get the two best games of the week, and, you know, I'm arguing against doing that. And that's probably because, well, we just watched like 12 hours of football the day before. Like, I don't want to watch 6.5 more, and then we know we're going to commit to 3 hours on Thursday. I don't even know what the Thursday night game is this week, but we've got that coming up.
We got a solid one. They're going to get me to watch this Thursday. They're going to get me to peek in Tampa Bay at Chicago.
Are you, now I'm counting on you to do the finals doubleheader tonight. As we've got,
I'm gonna do that. Although, you know, I got some other things I'm taking care of. I might come in at halftime of the WNBA game. But yeah, I'm on it. I'm on it. For those of you guys can't see, he got the sweet WNBA hoodie right now. I'm digging that.
I do, man. The Storm looking for their fourth WNBA champion. I'm acting like I'm rooting for the Storm. I ain't rooting for nobody, but I'm surprised, man. They made it. They made it through the wobble. Like, they did not have the same amount of protection.
I love the wobble.
They did not have the same amount of insulation that the NBA had there in Florida, but they managed to make it through, man. So good for them. They're going to crown a champion, and unlike the NBA, they've got a ways to go before their next season starts. So they're in pretty good shape for 2021. Kyle Shanahan and the San Francisco 49ers, they just can't get through a week without some sort of catastrophic injury news. By the way, this just came out within the last hour. Mohamed Sanu is no longer a San Francisco 49er.
Excuse me?
Mohamed Sanu, we hardly knew you. Cue Boys to Men. Yeah, they let him go. And I guess the thought is with Debo back, Brandon Ayuk has kind of carved out his spot. I guess they thought, hey, thanks, pal.
Okay. This goes back to what I talked about yesterday with Grant Cohn. Why is Trent Taylor out there? Why is he on the roster? Now, there's going to be a couple times when I kind of feel bad about some of the stuff I did. And this may be one of the times, even though I got to do what I got to do. Trent Taylor got married yesterday. So congratulations to him, you know, and his lovely bride. That is awesome.
You spent several minutes trashing the man yesterday on his wedding day.
Yeah, I did. So I apologize for trashing him on his wedding day. Let's say I don't hope you lose your job, but I don't know if you should be active every day.
I don't want you to lose your job. Trent, I don't want you to lose your job. What I would like for you, though, is to be able to spend more time with your wife.
There we go. Like, family first, Trent. Family first.
That is full spin right there.
Because when he's out there, I mean, it's like for nothing. So if you're going to have him out there and you're going to try to make him a little Edelman, run some stuff for him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Put a package together for him. I'm all for putting a package together for people, right?
I see that.
I feel like it can be done. But, I mean, right now, for what? To your point, why are we getting rid of Sanu? For what? So Trent Taylor can get more snaps?
Can they
if they bring up Juwan Jennings, then okay, maybe we got action. But I don't know. I'm baffled by this one.
Well, it's not like Mohamed Sanu was lighting the world on fire. Did Mohamed? Okay, honest to God question. Did Mohamed Sanu play the other night?
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, so I
if
doubt
a player
it.
Who is released, who doesn't play, is he really released? You know what I mean? It's like if a tree falls in the forest, if Mohamed Sanu is released, but Mohamed Sanu isn't playing, is Mohamed Sanu really released? Sure, his bank account might be a smidge bit different, yeah. But like in terms of what Kyle Shanahan is doing this weekend against the Miami Dolphins, I don't know that it's that different or any game moving forward.
Nah, it's nothing to freak out about, with especially with the guys coming back. You know, you got your Debo and Brandon Ayuk and Kendrick Bourne and Kittle's basically another receiver out there. So I get it. But I'm looking at the depth of this wide receiver core. And, I mean, Trent Taylor, Dante Pettis, like what are we doing?
Well, I think that's another guy he wants to get involved. I think he wants to get Dante Pettis more involved. Is there anyone else you want to apologize to before we go on to some other news and notes from?
Well, now that you mention it.
Okay.
I said that Dante Johnson, you could find somebody better on the corner of 24th and Florin. And he had a rough game yesterday, gave up the game-winning touchdown. Well, he was playing injured yesterday. It comes out that, you know, he had a growing injury, so sorry, Dante. Now, I was completely justified in saying what I was saying because it's not like he's been good in the past and just had this bad moment. This was accumulation of just bad performances over and over again that, you know, all came to a head yesterday on the radio after he gave up that 30-yard touchdown or whatever to the Eagles. But he was gutting it out yesterday, so salute to him.
Okay. All right.
Damien. I got integrity.
I never question that for a second. Never question that for a second. It's why I'll take this opportunity to apologize to Bill O'Brien for absolutely nothing. That's the only good line Conor McGregor has ever uttered. I'd like to apologize for absolutely nothing. You know what cracks me up about Bill O'Brien's firing is people who have covered him. You know what's crazy? Can someone double check this? Bill O'Brien's been the coach for 7 years in Houston. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
7 years. Isn't that the same exact amount of time that Doc Rivers was the head coach in Los Angeles?
That's true.
Yeah. I don't even equate those things to be even remotely the same. I feel like Doc Rivers has been with the Los Angeles Clippers for an eternity.
Yeah,
he's
been there a longer time than 7 years.
When I saw, man, Bill O'Brien has really been there for 7 years. Like, holy crap. And then I thought, wait a minute, Doc was with, and you look that up, and it's just that was a mind. That was a mind trick for me yesterday.
That was crazy.
I couldn't believe that. Cracks me up. People who cover him, you know, they write, oh, it's just Bill O'Brien. He was so accommodating. He was such a nice guy. He was such a great guy, such a wonderful human. It's like, yeah, no one thinks he should be fired because he's a jerk.
Right.
You think he should be fired because he's doing a bad job as a Houston Texans coach. And this is the thing, too, with, you know, firing coaches. It's, you know, this is what Monty McNair is going to be looking at with the Sacramento Kings. Mm-hmm. Expectations. Clearly defined expectations. Mm-hmm. The Texans, high expectations. The Texans, low return on those expectations. Like, it didn't work out, and that's ultimately what led to him being released. And it's Romeo Cornell. I think he was a head coach for Cleveland. He's been an interim coach several times. He's going to be the head coach, I guess, for the Houston Texans. One thing the NFL coaches don't really do, they don't hire in the middle of the season. Now, granted, most NBA teams don't do that either. They don't hire in the middle of the season either.
Right.
But it looks like Romeo Cornell, in a job that I don't imagine under any circumstances his, he'll be coaching out the remaining 12 games for the Houston Texans.
And, Damien, due to the rules that we have established here on D'Lo and KC for NFL coaches, I'm not going to say anything about Romeo Cornell.
We're gonna quietly root for Romeo Cornell and not point out any of his deficiencies. Those are the rules as established by Damien Barling and Kenny Caraway here on D'Lo and KC. Brian Flores, another coach who we will not criticize.
No, nothing for me.
we won't criticize him for this decision either. Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be the starting quarterback versus your San Francisco 49ers coming up this weekend. And I've been trying to figure out, like, I think this is a good thing for the 49ers.
Yeah, I know where you're going. I feel you.
Because he's due. He's due for that Ryan Fitzpatrick game where you just go, oh, my God, this dude can win the game for you, and he can just throw you right out of it, and you can lose by 40. Like, I feel like, okay, we're a quarter way through the season. Fitzpatrick hasn't done anything crazy. We're going to get one of those crazy games from Ryan Fitzpatrick here this week.
The script that has already been written is being followed precisely, right? Fitzpatrick, you know, the Dolphins are going nowhere. They're 1-3. He had a questionable game in game 4, which kind of brought into question, okay, is it Tua time? Should he be starting? But then the coach, in this case, Brian Flores, is like, no. We're going to go with Fitzpatrick, you know, in the week 5. And, you know, he's kind of teetering on the edge. Like, Tua coming in is now has entered his mind. And then, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to, like, seal the deal on Sunday with, like, a 3 or 4 interception performance. And Tua's going to be starting in week 6. This is – it was already written. Like I said, like Nas told us, it was written.
It was week 3 last year that he threw for 3 touchdowns and 3 interceptions.
Mm.
It's going to happen. Like, it's bound to happen. Actually, I take that back. That was 2018. In 2000, he was with Tampa Bay in 2018. Yeah. In 2019, just last year, he was with Miami. It was week number 2 that he threw for 0 touchdowns and 3 interceptions.
Got started early.
It's like, why wait? Let's just keep it moving. This is what happens with Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's an extraordinary thing. It really is.
Yeah. Look, it was written. All right, we're on par right here. We're on course for the whole plan that was written in pretty much in August of how this was going to go. So that's a good sign, like you said, good sign for the Niners. You know, defensive backs, be ready. Be ready to go. You're going to get some action.
In 2016, this is science, dude. We are not making this up. In 2016, Ryan Fitzpatrick, week 3, 0 touchdowns, 6.
Oh, my God.
Count them.
Oh, my God.
6 interceptions in a 24-3 loss.
What team
to
was
Kansas
that?
City. He was with the New York Jets at the time. The New York Jets.
Can
he
we pull up their roster? Who was the backup?
He followed that performance up with a...
He started the next week?
With...
Oh, my gosh.
With 3 more interceptions.
Bro, how you got 9 picks in 2 weeks? How you got 9 picks in 2 weeks, fam?
Oh, man.
Come on, man.
God bless Ryan Fitzpatrick. Every year since 2016, I'm going back. I'm curious now. Let's see. Week 3 the year prior, 2 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Oh, man. God bless this dude. He is the gift that keeps on giving. And here he is. That was 2016. Here he is, 2020, still employed and still a starting quarterback.
2 picks last week, so
bro,
he's gearing up. He's gearing up for a big week 5 performance in the negative way.
You won't believe this. The year before, he threw 3 interceptions in week 3 and 2 more in week 4.
Come on, man. This guy just be giving the football away. Just be giving it away.
And you know what keeps him employed? Fast forward all the way to November 30th that same year, he throws for 6 touchdowns in a game.
And with all that being said, we went over yesterday, he is paid. Paid.
There is
Salute
no quarterback.
Keep getting that bag.
There
Keep
is
cashing
no
them checks, brother.
There is no quarterback in the NFL like Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't even know who to equate him to. The easiest one is Sam Bradford. But Sam Bradford, it's not like he throws 6 interceptions. First of all, Sam Bradford got paid in a way that Ryan Fitzpatrick could only dream about. But he was brought in year after year after year as a highly paid, full-time game managing starting quarterback. He wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, he was throwing the ball. You'd see him have like 19, you know, he'd be like 19 of 20 for 100 yards. It's an extraordinary sight. We'll come back. You'll hear what Kyle Shanahan had to say here as D'Lo and KC continue on ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC continues on ESPN 1320.
Got our distinguished power rankings coming up here in just about 10 minutes. You asked me, who was Ryan Fitzpatrick's backup quarterback in 2016 in which he was able to throw 6 interceptions 1 week and then come back, start the very next week, and throw 3 more?
Insane.
Bryce Petty.
Oh, my goodness.
Was the backup quarterback. The third string quarterback?
Geno.
Geno wow. Smith.
Geno.
Mm.
Oh, man. Somebody did a deep dive a little while ago. It might have been Bill Simmons or something. Just really looking at the history of the New York Jets. And there's not much there after Super Bowl III. Like, there's nothing there. Nothing there. It is a sad, sad sight.
The Rex Ryan years were interesting.
Got 2 AFC championship games with Mark Sanchez. They went to another one with Parcells and Keyshawn Johnson. Mm-hmm. I think that was 97 or whatever. They lost to one of the Elway Broncos teams that won. But that's it. We're talking about 3 years in the last 50, 60?
Trivia question for you. Mm. Is Geno Smith still in the NFL?
He's definitely still in the NFL. I see him every week.
You know what team that he's on then?
I see him every week. He's got singles now, and it's, you know, the hairstyle. He's got singles. I'd love to see him get in that game.
I wouldn't. I don't want to see him. I don't want to see him play. Absolutely not. He's on the Seattle Seahawks, by the way, for those who are not in on that game.
I'd love to see him get in the game. No, maybe Russ has to use the bathroom.
Maybe in a couple weeks. Maybe in a couple weeks when the 49ers play Seattle.
Russ is fatigued or something like that. He just needs a break.
Jimmy Garoppolo versus Geno Smith. There you have it. Hey, we might want to start paying attention. Well, you know what? Let's hold off on the Monday Night Football games. There's a couple of things. We're talking about quarterbacks. Here's what Kyle Shanahan had to say about the quarterback depth chart yesterday and where we are with Jimmy Garoppolo.
That's something we'll work through this week. I'm still not sure about Jimmy. Just finished with the players about 30 minutes ago. So I don't really know what we'll do on Wednesday. I'll have a plan by then, but haven't talked it over with the coaches yet, so not sure.
So the non-committal as to whether the depth chart is going to feature Nick Mullins at the top or C.J. Beathard at the top. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we're all waiting to find out what the status is of Jimmy Garoppolo, who was meeting with trainers at the time of Kyle Shanahan's press conference yesterday at 3:30.
Yeah, you know how I feel. They need Jimmy bad. They need him in the lineup. They need him under center bad.
But, by the way.
If they can't, go ahead.
About an hour from now. A little less. We're going to shut down any Jimmy, Nick Mullins, C.J. Beathard conversation forever.
Yeah, they should never even be mentioned in the same breath. I don't even want you to say that they're on the same roster. Like, say Jimmy Garoppolo is the starting quarterback, period. And his backups are C.J. Beathard and Nick Mullins. Like, don't put them in the same sentence. I don't even care if you're talking about the roster. Don't put them in the same sentence. No more.
But aren't you hashtag a Nick Mullins guy?
I like Nick Mullins. I think I'm not going back on it. I think he is a starting quarterback in this league. Mm. I think he's good. I think he's good.
I can't think of a single thing that I've ever changed your mind on. I might be able to change your mind on that.
Mm.
That in the business is called a tease. 916-349-1320. You want to connect with the show? That's a great way to do it. Again, 916-349-1320. You can get us at D'Lo and KC on Twitter as well. Big Al, what's going on, my man?
Big Al.
Guys, you would bet. I'm telling you, the way the two backups played, you're begging Jesus that you would have had Ken O'Brien, the great, out of UC Davis and had 3-4 good years with the Jets. Remember, he came out of the greatest quarterback draft class in NFL history. I think it was the 81 draft class, right? Elway, Marino. I think he was in that class, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a fair point. How many Super Bowls did they win out of that?
No. Super Bowls, no. You're right.
Playoff games?
No Super Bowls.
Playoff games, Big Al?
Went to playoffs. Let's see. I'm trying to remember who his running back was. They had a decent team. They might. Let's see. Was that too early? I think right with him or that year, they had Mark Gastineau, who at the time had set the rookie sack record, the great one, out of Oklahoma State. Yeah. Anyway, no, they had good. They had, you know, good, not great teams.
Okay. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, he was a very competent quarterback. He was not. Let's put it this way. He's probably going to end up being better, in my opinion, than almost any of the. There's only one USC quarterback I have any regard for, Carson Palmer. The current Jet quarterback is a. He's a ding dong, like most have been.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's. We appreciate you, Big Al. That's. He's not exactly the quarterback factory. No. There in USC, considering how much hype around them. We appreciate you so much for tuning in, D'Lo and KC, here on the Ryan Fitzpatrick Radio Network in your home of New York Jets quarterback talk. We have got you covered if you want to hear about the Jets in their esteemed or perhaps not so much quarterback history. You know, another issue, not just starting quarterbacks for Kyle Shanahan and the San Francisco 49ers, but mobile quarterbacks. And Kyle Shanahan was asked, like, are you going to address this? Like, are you guys going to be able to adjust each time you face a mobile quarterback?
Yes, definitely. You always got to adjust that. But adjusting, it doesn't always get the results done. You know, we got that ran at us twice before I thought we executed it correctly. The third time we did it right. And we were right there. I think it was in the third quarter. Wentz ended up making us miss a little bit, but at least we had two guys there to make the tackle. So it was just, you always got to make those adjustments and be ready for it. I was just a little disappointed we didn't hit it the first time. Something we're trying to execute and work on throughout the week, and we got to make sure we do a better job of coaching it throughout the week and getting that out of our players. So when it happens the first time, we shut it down and don't need to wait for the next time.
That's going to be an interesting thing to watch, Kenny, this weekend.
Unpopular opinion here. Maybe I'm just posing a question. Is that overblown a little bit, the whole mobile quarterbacks killing the 49ers thing? Because I'll tell you this right now. They didn't lose in week one against Kyler or last week against Carson Wentz because they were mobile. They lost because of things that they didn't do, whether it's taking care of the football, not converting on third down offensively. Last year they played Kyler, they beat him twice. Last year they played Russell Wilson, they were 1-2. They lost to Lamar Jackson, but a lot of people lost to Lamar Jackson. And they actually played the Ravens closer than anybody in the regular season did. So I know it's a lot of like, you know, when it happens, like it's really noticeable. Like, oh, look at that running quarterback. He got 15. He got 15 yards. The 49ers just can't stop mobile quarterback. This is their Achilles heel. They've never really been beat because of it.
Yeah, but play the other side of the coin here and say maybe it's not, you know, 170 yards on the ground from Lamar Jackson or 100 yards on the ground from Kyler Murray, but maybe it's more how functional guys get when they get pushed out of the pocket and the 49ers' inability to close on sacks. Like, we both are of the belief that the defensive line did a really good job last week, perhaps the best job that they've had, or perhaps the best job, excuse me, that they've done so far this year. But Carson Wentz is a quarterback who can create once he gets outside of the pocket. And yeah, he has the very, you know, memorable run pass option play where he pretty much walks into the end zone. Yeah. And then, but more specifically, there was a play in which, you know, they're playing from behind. He scrambled around. They got him. Like, he's gone. They've got him sacked for about a 12-yard loss. He's able to get to the outside, maneuver around a little bit more, and pick up about 27 yards in the air. I think it's that maybe more than the total number of yards gained by a running, by a quarterback on the ground, as opposed to being able to kind of close the deal once you get through that offensive line, which again, the 49ers, I think, did really, really well on Sunday. They just weren't able to get, they got to Carson. By the way, it's worth pointing out, they got to Carson Wentz four times on Sunday night. Yeah. But the plays that they couldn't get to him wound up being very costly, including the touchdown and including that 20-plus yard pickup when he scrambled to the sideline.
So my thing, I guess, is, number one, I don't think any of these guys have cost them a game. Like, they haven't lost the game because they just couldn't stop a mobile quarterback. And then number two, I don't think any of these guys that we've talked about that have had success on the ground against them over the last, you know, 20 games or whatever, going back to last year, I don't think they do anything other than what they do every week. Like, this is what they do. This is what they do in the NFL. That's, it's not like they start eating when they see the 49ers. Like, this is what they do.
Sure. That's fair, but you're supposed to hold the 49ers to a higher regard than that, though. Because if you're a Super Bowl team, you've got to stop a quarterback like that. If you're a team that wants to, George Kittle said this on Sunday. He said this at the podium on Sunday. Like, we're frustrated because we want to get back to the Super Bowl. We've got goals this season, and we're not doing the things that we're supposed to. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't be like everybody else. If that's your, I understand everybody's goal is to get to the Super Bowl, but this is a team that was there just a couple of months ago.
Right.
Like, you have to be above what the average is. And right now, the 49ers, if that's the argument, they're just at the average. That's not going to be good enough to get to the Super Bowl.
I understand. I guess it's like, you know, if you're going up against, I don't know, Drew Brees in his heyday, and you're like, oh, Drew Brees, he just shredded us for 350 yards. We have problems against pocket quarterbacks because they just light us up. Well, Drew Brees lights everybody up. You know what I'm saying?
Well, but
lights it. That's what they do. That's their unique, one-of-a-kind skill in the NFL. Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, even Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz been doing this. You know what I'm saying? Lamar Jackson last year. This is what they do. This is why they're who they are in the NFL. You can't stop them from doing – nobody can stop them from doing what they do.
But great teams have to figure out a way to stop them. Like, we saw the Titans shut down Lamar Jackson last year. Like, you've got to be able to do that.
And they've done that more times than not, though. I guess that's my whole point. Like, they lost to Kyler and they lost to Wentz, not because they were running, because they gave up a block punt and because they, in the Philly game, gave up 14 points on two turnovers. Like, that's why they lost.
Is it the and you're 100% right. I'm not arguing with you a single bit. So do you think this narrative, this conversation, or that question to Kyle Shanahan, which he believes it's a problem also, by the way, maybe not as big as we do, or maybe not as much as we talk about it, but do you think that this is just a hangover from, I know you hate that word, but is this just a hangover from the Super Bowl? Like, it's lingering around, you know, Patrick Mahomes being able to get free there late in the fourth quarter, picking up first downs. Do you think that that's what's lingering into this thought that, well, they can't? And, of course, they see Russell Wilson twice a year.
Right.
So that's going to play into the conversation as well.
Exactly. I think more than anything, especially in this last game against the Eagles, I think this is where you really missed the Nick Bosa. They needed a finisher, a guy that finishes those quarterback pressures. And like you said, like you mentioned, they did get four sacks. But Nick is a game changer in that respect. That's what makes him unique to other pass rushers in this league. When he gets to you, he finishes you. You know what I'm saying? He makes your life a living hell, and you're not able to go back 20 yards back and hit the corner and do all this. You're typically not able to do that with Nick Bosa. And I think, you know, Armstead and Hyder Jr. and everything, and even Kinlaw, they were getting pressure, but the guy that makes it has that separation between the good and the great is Nick Bosa, and you didn't have him there as a finisher on Sunday. I think that's where you kind of missed him a few times trying to get Carson Wentz to the ground.
And that goes back to what I said yesterday, that maybe we're just at a point where the personnel losses are a little bit too much. I mean,
could be.
You thought before the season, and you put an exclamation point on it after, you know, the injuries in the Jets game. You said this was going to be a year that the offense was going to have to take over for the defense, that this wasn't going to be a team that got back to the Super Bowl because their defense was great for a second straight year. They were going to get back to the Super Bowl because their offense was exceptional. Mm-hmm. And offenses across the NFL through the first 4 weeks of the league, for the first 4 weeks of the season, are exceptional.
Yeah.
We'll explain what that means here coming up in just a little bit, but you said before the season the offense has to step up, and then now the losses come into play, and it's like, okay, you maybe knew the defense wasn't going to be as good as it was last year, which is a fine sentiment given how good that they were last year. But then it's like, okay, now we lost Nick Bosa. Now we lost our middle rusher. The game changes when you lose your middle rusher. Minnesota is dealing with the same thing. Minnesota, all the way up until 3 days before the start of the season, was believed to have the best defense, or certainly one of a top five defense in the league. Danielle Hunter goes down, and you get made aware really, really quick what a middle rusher means. And all of a sudden it's, okay, this defense isn't as good. They lost Nick Bosa for maybe lack of a better term, maybe the perfect term. They lost their anchor. Mm-hmm. They lost the guy who centers everything they're doing. That's not a knock on Arik Armstead. That's not a knock on, you know, anyone else who's out there on the field for them. That's not even a knock on Solomon Thomas, who was out for the year. That's just how good Nick Bosa is. And it's one of the reasons I hate the next man up line, because I feel like it diminishes the guy who just went down. I understand the philosophy behind it. Like, hey, we're a team. We function as a team. We got to operate as a team. So when one goes down, the other goes up. Yeah, it's not that simple.
Right.
It's a great line to use for your team, but on the outside, it's like, it's not just next man up for Nick Bosa. We learned, even in a loss, it's not next man up for George Kittle. That's not how this works. There aren't very many tight ends who can get 15 receptions for 180 yards, though we saw two of them in primetime over the course of the last two nights, one in San Francisco, one in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. But that's not normal. George Kittle numbers, that's not normal. So the next man up philosophy, even as good as Jordan Reed was doing, it's not that.
Absolutely.
I mean, it doesn't work.
These guys are who they are for a reason, like the Kittles and the Bosas and, you know, your starters. Like, they won the starting position for a reason. You know what I'm saying? Like, that matters. And while, you know, you guys hear me talk all the time about deepest roster in the league and all this other stuff, and I still believe that, there still is an element of what you're talking about. Like, you can't just lose everybody. You know what I'm saying? And, like, think that's okay. I look at the situation now with K'Wan Williams. That, like, it worries me, these injuries that they continue to have. And not only that, but the guys aren't coming back as quick as expected or as quick as we thought, whether it's with Jimmy or Raheem Mostert, and now Richard Sherman is, you know, up in the air right now. Like, I still believed what I believed about this team's what they could do this year. That's if guys were coming back. Guys aren't coming back, and they're starting to lose more and more guys. And that's – you can only sustain so much, right? You can only take so much when it comes to the injury front and losing starters, that at some point there's a breaking point there. And if they're not there already, they're close to it. They gotta start getting these guys back, and they got to stop having injuries.
I don't want to gloss over what you just said there. Kyle Shanahan said yesterday Richard Sherman was a 3 to 4 week injury. This is the third week, but he doesn't believe he's going to be ready. He said the exact term that he used for both Raheem Mostert and Richard Sherman was not likely. Mm-hmm. He doesn't expect them to be ready to practice tomorrow. Thus, he doesn't expect them to be ready for the Miami Dolphins game on Sunday.
That's big, man. That's big. Yeah. They need I think they can get away with not having Sherman for one more week. But I said yesterday and on 49ers game day, they need Raheem Mostert. Especially if he's going to just, like, keep pounding McKinnon into this line. And, you know, like I said, a great story. I love McKinnon. I love him for the role that he should play on this team right now. He's not an every down back. Mm-hmm. He's just not an every down back. They need Raheem Mostert in a bad, bad way. And if he's not there on Sunday, we got problems.
You know what
we
I
got
need?
Problems.
I need power rankings.
They say this is a big rich town. Mm-hmm. I just come from the poorest part.
Mm-hmm. All right. Bright, so city lights, I hear you. Who you want to go first? You want me to go first? You want me to give you my power rankings first?
I think I went first last week. You go first this week.
Okay, I'm going to give you the definitive, D'Lo and Casey, the official, if you will, D'Lo and Casey power rankings last week, just to spark memories for everybody. Seattle at number 1, Kansas City at number 2, Green Bay, Buffalo, New England. They rounded out my top 5. New England lost this week, so I put the Baltimore Ravens.
Hey, back we got into a new entry into D'Lo's power rankings.
We do, the Baltimore Ravens, but it gets a little boring after that because your Buffalo Bills continue to play well. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, so what do I do with them? They were at number 4 last week. I'm going to leave them at number 4. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put them ahead of the Green Bay Packers because we saw what the Green Bay Packers were. Matt LaFleur is 17-3 in his first 20 games.
I low-key respect that.
Yeah, my bad for missing that.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like we were waiting all of last year for some sort of, like, big, like, dissension, some sort of fight between the two. But 17 wins for Matt LaFleur in his first 20 games, man, that's impressive. There's only one other coach that has a number like that. He actually has one more, and it is your guy, George Seifert.
Ooh,
he won 18 of his first 20 games. So I got to leave the Packers right there at number three. At number two, Kenny Caraway. The Seattle Seahawks.
Whoa, Nelly, we got a new number one.
Despite beating the Dolphins 31-23, as I mentioned a moment ago, I had New England in my top five last week.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas City, as a cap to our week four of NFL action, beat the New England Patriots, and I went full BCS style.
I'm about to say,
well,
I see you going KC, BCS, you know, type of strength of schedule, strength of win type thing. I see you.
Let's go ahead and elevate the Kansas City Chiefs to that esteemed number one position in D'Lo's power rankings here on D'Lo and KC.
Wow.
So I've got Kansas City at number one, mm-hmm. Seattle for the first time all year at number two, the Green Bay Packers at three, the Buffalo Bills at number four, and at number five, the Baltimore Ravens. For those who are wondering, I was going back and forth at number five between the Ravens and the Bucks. And I just couldn't bring myself to put the Tampa Bay Bucks in there. So I went with Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens.
Good call. All right? And this is going to be bad radio because we almost have the same exact top five.
Okay.
I knew
this was possible.
Uh-huh. Now Baltimore at five, Buffalo at four. I think, let me look last week. Did I switch them around? Yeah, I switched them around this week. Buffalo's 4-0. All right, but mm-hmm. the Buffaloes look very good. So mm-hmm. they went from number five to number four. I only moved the Ravens down one spot. They're at number five. So five Ravens, four Buffalo Bills. I have your Seattle Seahawks at number three still. Okay. Green Bay Packers, man. I know that the Niners mopped the floor with them, beat them down, curb stomped them, whatever you want to say, all last year, and that's in the minds of a lot of 49er fans. But I'm impressed with what they've done in the first four games. I'm very impressed.
That is in the mind of no one except you. Who's thinking about the Green Bay Packers losing to the 49ers last year? What does that got to do with anything?
I mean, like this week, nobody's thinking about it. But coming into the season and everything, that was a big topic of discussion. Like,
people
have the Packers in power rankings ahead of the 49ers. And they're like, how? Like the combined score. Man, I don't know if you remember. That was like a thing for like 2 days. Like the combined score was like 98-10. Like how can anybody preseason pick the Packers ahead of the Niners? So that was a big thing. But, I mean, the Packers, you can say they, you know, didn't necessarily improve in a lot of areas coming into the year or whatever, but they're cooking right now. They are absolutely cooking. And, they're number two. And number one, I got the Kansas City Chiefs. As they had about, 12,000 people in the stands last night?
Yeah, it actually looked like there were a lot of people there, of course, in the 60,000. I was surprised. And then they showed a couple of shots of the Dallas crowd, too. Jerry Jones is lying his ass off. There's no way that's 25%. He got about 40% of the people in there.
Yes.
There's no way that's 25%.
It's almost standing room only in that piece. Yeah. Goodness gracious. The Cleveland Browns are actually getting a boost. Did you see that? They're going to be able to go from 6,000 to 12,000 for their next game.
I can't imagine why at all that would be a bad idea. The Packers and the Chiefs have combined. They're each 4-0. Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes have combined for 24 touchdowns this season and zero interceptions. That stat pales in comparison to this one. This is one of my favorite stats that I've ever come across. Over the last 4 years, each of the last four seasons, the Kansas City Chiefs have started 4-0.
Wow.
Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes have combined for a 16-0 record, 43 touchdowns, zero interceptions.
That's crazy.
4,754 yards between those two quarterbacks over the first quarter of the season of the last four seasons.
Wow. That is crazy. What's even crazier is at one point last year, the Chiefs were 5-4.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
No matter what goes on in these next couple of weeks, we see these things all the time.
Eddie Van Halen passed away.
Oh, R.I.P. to the legend.
Wow.
Man. R.I.P. to the legend, man.
He was battling cancer. God, I didn't even – these guys, like, pass away. I didn't even know they had cancer. I didn't know Eddie Van Halen had cancer. Man, that's terrible. We'll step out. We'll come back. We'll reset. We'll talk sports. We'll talk Bill O'Brien. We'll talk Bill O'Brien out. We'll talk about who's next and what that might mean for the San Francisco 49ers and Robert Saleh. That's coming up here on ESPN 1320. here on D'Lo and KC here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento's home of 49ers football. Sad to just read that the passing of Eddie Van Halen. I love music, man, music of all kinds. I've never been, you know, swayed to only listen to hip-hop or R&B or whatever, man. If it's good music, I'll listen to it. Mm-hmm. And growing up in the 80s, Van Halen and those guitar riffs and even some of that like pop metal music, man, was always good stuff. And my favorite story, I love Michael Jackson. My favorite story will always be he, you know how much he got paid for Beat It?
No.
Nothing. He did it for free.
Wow.
He'll joke, and I've always believed that he was joking. I don't believe Eddie Van Halen's ever been hard up for money, so I always believed that he was never hurt by not having royalties on that. But he always says, if I would have known, then perhaps I might have worked in a royalty deal. But, yeah, he did that famous guitar riff on Beat It for Free. If you search hard enough, you can find Eddie Van Halen on stage with Michael Jackson in like mid-80s on the Victory Tour with the Jackson 5. The Victory Tour is essentially the Thriller Tour. Like, Thriller came out, but Mike had already agreed to go on tour with his brother. So instead of the Thriller Tour, it's basically the Victory Tour. So Beat It would regularly close out concerts. And in Los Angeles, there's a clip somewhere of Eddie Van Halen on stage with Michael Jackson. And it's such an 80s throwback because I think Emmanuel Lewis is on stage with him, too.
That's Mike's boy.
Like, Webster is on stage. Like, it's kind of a bizarre scene, but it's like the most 80s scene ever. It's like a Pepsi commercial come to life. And it's a cool clip if you can find that on YouTube. But, yeah, Eddie Van Halen passed away at 65. I remember reading, and I think the Hollywood Reporter noted this also, he gives out guitars to you. Like, we talk about often introducing kids into like media and broadcasting and, you know, things that they might not know, programs that they might not know are available for them.
Yeah.
And like, that's what Eddie Van Halen does. He does the same thing every year. He donates like 75 to 100 guitars to kids each year who have an interest in music. And he shows them, hey, here's, you know, those types of things. Those are expensive. Like, those are costly, and he takes away that expense and introduces them to music, man, which is always something I respected about him. So
very, very, very sad, man. His legendary career, man. RIP to the legend, man. Like, I'm not going to want to act like I'm familiar with, you know, his work that's a little before my time and out of my genre, but just the fact that I know who he is. That tells you right there the legend that he is, or, you know, I have no real, you know, it's not in my genre, nothing like that. But you say the name, and the name is synonymous. You know what I'm saying? So that's a testament to who he was. So
yeah, people, he's one of those guys people know across. He's one of those people that you'll know across genres. I mean, you'll see tributes, I'm sure, pouring in, not just from rock, but you'll see tributes pouring in from, you know, the hip-hop community. You'll see tributes pouring in all day, all over the place.
I didn't know that about Beat It, man. That's iconic. I didn't know that. Yeah,
that's Eddie Van Halen on Beat It, and it didn't cost Quincy Jones a dollar to get that. It's completely free. I don't know how to transition from Eddie Van Halen passing away to Bill O'Brien being fired, so just bear with me here as we go back to our sports conversations. We're going to talk more, by the way, about your San Francisco 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo. And you heard what Kyle Shanahan said about Jimmy Garoppolo and the uncertainty of the depth chart moving forward. That's something that they're going to get worked out today. That's something they'll get worked out before practice tomorrow. Obviously, they're waiting to see what Jimmy's availability is going to be. But I'm going to shut down any conversations about Nick Mullins or C.J. Beathard being a starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. And Kenny Caraway, I might change your mind about Nick Mullins being a starting quarterback in this league. Period.
Okay. I got an open mind. I'm listening. Okay. When it comes, I'm listening.
About 30 minutes, we'll have that for you. As we ended yesterday's show in a moment that will make me laugh forever, we got the news on our way out the door that Bill O'Brien had been fired by the Houston Texans, both as the head coach and is the de facto general manager or player personnel or whatever his official title was. And my feeling with Bill O'Brien has always been they've had a really talented roster there in Houston. I'm a huge fan of Deshaun Watson, and you just haven't been able to get the most out of him. You were the guy who racked up the biggest salary cap in, or the highest payroll, I should say, in the NFL, but you weren't able to retain the services of DeAndre Hopkins. You've got a what feels like a shell of J.J. Watt. You let Jadeveon Clowney leave. You know, I have a lot of questions, but you've never really tried to lock up that running back position. Like, you just, I feel like he has done enough. Win-loss record be damned. We talked about managing expectations earlier. I feel like he has done enough to warrant being terminated. And so looking at that, you know, to get kind of, you know, I don't want to get dark on you, but, yo, who's next? Because I think there's a couple of coaches in line who might be, you know, updating their resume, trying to figure out where they can get coordinator positions. And honestly, the one who might be at the front of the line is a guy that we saw last night in the Monday Night Football game. I was going to say the late game, but, you know, the Monday Night Football game against the Packers, and that's Dan Quinn.
Oh, to get fired. I thought you meant to get that job. I was about to say, excuse me, Dan Quinn, what?
No, we'll talk about who might get these jobs in a minute, but I think what I wanted to do was establish there's going to be some openings. Like, there are going to – normally there's, you know, Black Monday, right? That's the term the day after the regular season, and it's Black Monday for one profession and one profession only,
yeah.
NFL coaches.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean a damn thing to you or me. But to NFL coaches and their assistants and their coaching staffs, it means a lot to them. And I'm not sure. I don't think Adam Gase is going to get fired in season. Like, I wonder if Anthony Lynn is on thin ice here in his fourth year, despite the fact he finished with two good records his first two seasons. But Dan Quinn, I can see being as an in-season firing.
And
Romeo Crennel ain't going to be nobody's head coach.
Absolutely not. And I'm surprised, you know, as we're doing the show, to be honest with you, that there hasn't been a Schefter tweet about Dan Quinn, because I'm surprised he made it to week four, to be honest with you. After the things we saw in the first 3 weeks of the season from the Falcons, accumulated with everything that's gone on in his tender for the last 2-3 years, the writing's on the wall.
He gets bailed out of the Super Bowl a lot.
All the time.
Kyle Shanahan takes the brunt of that, because Kyle Shanahan was, like, I think people, because it was such an offensively, it was a spectacular offense that year that they went to the
number one offense in the game, I think.
Kyle Shanahan got a lot of love for that. So when it went the other way in the second half of the Super Bowl, he gets the brunt of the brunt of the criticism. Meanwhile, Dan Quinn is just like, you know, like it doesn't, you don't hear his name brought up with that Super Bowl loss as much. But once he loses his job, and, you know, assuming, of course, that he loses his job, I don't think he's going to be able to escape that as much. Mm-hmm. But honestly, that loss to the Cowboys a couple of weeks ago, that's going to be brought up a lot when talking about Dan Quinn, because that was bad.
I mean, with all due respect, that was a fireable offense to lose that game. I mean, that was...
In the manner in which they lost. Yeah, like, that's a team not being prepared. That's exactly. A team not understanding the rules. Like, that's a... You can't have those types of lapses out there on the field. And it's up to the coach to make sure that you don't. Those are situations that you have to go out before you even... And maybe the special teams coordinator, you know, needs a talking to also. But those are... Okay, guys... let's make sure we, you know, go over A, B, C, and D scenarios as quickly as you can, because, you know, the second the team goes in the end zone, you know you're going to have to deal with something,
right?
You know, if you're the special teams, okay, given the amount of time left, they're going to do an onside kick. Here's what we need to be prepared for.
Yeah. Special teams coordinator, yeah, I understand that. But even I think those are one of the times when the head coach comes and gathers everybody around and says, this is what we're doing. You know what I mean? This is how we're going to secure this win right here, this onside kick, whatever the case may be. That's on him. That's on him. So, yeah.
Robert Saleh is going to get a lot of, and I don't think a bad 49ers season changes this. Like, if this situation, if the 49ers finish .500, like, I don't think it changes the pursuit of Robert Saleh to be a head coach in the NFL. I would, given the fact that I can look, you know, I can look around. Matt Patricia, if he survives this season, because I don't believe that Detroit is going to be good. I mean, they're 1-3 right now. I don't believe they're going to be much better as the season goes along. I mean, Chicago continues to win games. I don't know where Minnesota's going to be. No one's going to be able to compete with Green Bay. I just don't see Detroit doing well. But you look at coaches like Matt Patricia, you look at coaches like Dan Quinn, who we mentioned there just a moment ago, and you start to look around and wonder if Anthony Lynn is going to make it through. We know that, you know, Romeo Crennel is taking over for Bill O'Brien. Neither of us see Romeo Crennel as a head coach. And of course, Adam Gase. Adam Gase constantly on the termination watch here. I don't know how you have 3, 4, 5 potential job openings and Robert Saleh doesn't land one of those.
Well, I'll tell you one scenario where it may happen. And we talked about this on the pre-show meeting and you understood where I was coming from. A lot of these openings, these potential openings, are going to be guys, defensive guys, losing the head coaching job. Typically, when you get a new coach in there, you're going to zag from where you were before. So, for instance, we'll just use Atlanta, for instance. I couldn't see them going after another defensive guy after Dan Quinn.
They're going to go with someone who can get the most out of Matt Ryan and what exactly may be his, I don't know if it's his last few years, but he's probably on a different swing of his career right now. You want to try to get the most out of him before you completely lose that.
So you got that situation in Atlanta. You got that situation probably, you know, we're not sure what happens with Zimmer, but probably in Minnesota, if there's an opening there, you got that type of situation. What's the other one we talked about? We talked in Houston. I think Eric Bieniemy gets that one. You know, Houston or the Jets. Those are the two that would be, you know, offensive type of hires. I think he gets one of the two.
Man, please don't go to Houston, or please don't go to New York. Please don't go to the Jets, Eric Bieniemy. Please don't go to the Jets. Like, that just feels like nothing is ever. Is there a curse that we don't know about? Did Joe Namath put a curse on the Jets or something? But Houston seems perfect.
Yeah.
For Eric Bieniemy, and that's the name that's going to get a lot of conversation here through the course of. And again, I don't think it matters what Romeo Crennel does. I don't believe he's going to be the head coach next year.
It's not happening for him. But so when you talk about Saleh, I think it's possibly really just down to two positions, and that's the Chargers and the Jets. Let's just assume Bieniemy goes to Houston. Chargers and the Jets. Okay. And who knows what they're doing in Jacksonville, but I think that's also a defensive do they have the same
Matt
head
Rhule
coach?
Is, no, that's not Jacksonville. That's Doug Marrone. Doug Marrone is in Jacksonville.
And he's been there for a minute, right? He's
couple,
the same when I was
years.
There.
He's a couple
he
years.
He was there when they were in the AFC Championship game, right?
Yes, but I love that you say that as if that was an eternity ago. That was like three. That was like two or three seasons ago.
Right. They lost the entire defense since then.
It feels like an eternity ago, right, but it very much was not.
Right. So yeah, it very much according was not. To my logic, according to KC's logic, there might only be one or two openings for a Robert Saleh defensive coordinator, and that's like the Chargers and the Jets.
Yeah.
So... I think he's deserving of a head coaching job, but it just 49ers. Might not be good timing. Excellent for the 49ers. Excellent. So,
no chance Jerry fires Mike McCarthy. Like, I wonder if Jerry just goes, you know what, I've had it, and fires him now, and just goes, takes over play calling duties himself.
Look here.
If you want something done right, you got to do it yourself.
Look here. I saw an article today where, to answer your question, there's zero chance, because I saw an article today where Jerry was out here defending Mike Nolan as a defensive coordinator.
Oh, my gosh.
So Jerry don't think nothing's wrong.
That's true. That's true. And Charlie, our engineer, Charlie, says, I think Jerry's calling the plays now, and that's a good call. Jerry has been calling the plays for a very, very, very long time.
Biagi's probably not doing a bad job, because that ain't the problem.
Yeah, it sure isn't. I mean, Dak Prescott, we marveled at Ryan Fitzpatrick having 9 interceptions over a 2-week period. I think Dak Prescott's got 9 touchdowns over a 2-week period, and they're not winning.
No.
They are not winning.
They gave up almost 50 to a quarterback that threw for 160 yards. How does that happen?
That is extraordinary. It was like 160 yards. 163, I think, was the exact number, versus 402 or 502 from Dak Prescott.
And you were down by like,
and he
gave up 34 unanswered at one point. Unbelievable.
Well, that's where the turnover game comes into play, where you're talking about earlier with the San Francisco 49ers and, and what switched the Philadelphia Eagles game. That's how the Cowboys found themselves in that hole. Ezekiel Elliott, you know, turned over the ball. I think Dak did have a turnover in that game. Like, they just had, you know, things go wrong that created short fields or even scores, you know, immediate scores off of turnovers. And that's how they wound up down by so much. And then it was Dak, you know, coming to lead the way. Meanwhile, everyone's going to look at him looking for that contract extension this year for what might be a very, very bad Dallas Cowboys team in which he puts up monstrous freaking numbers.
Can you – well, you can, and you just might. But with your defense being that bad, can you just add just $20 million to the offense? Like, it's all good?
I don't know.
Cowboys? Like, so, like, okay, our defense is the worst in the history of Western civilization. Let's go give some more money to the offense by signing Dak.
Yeah, that's actually the worst in Western civilization. That's confirmed by Elias. That was a stat I saw this morning. Dallas Cowboys the worst in Western civilization.
But the point is, like, yeah, our defense is terrible. Let's go give more. Let's lock up our quarterback. What?
Yeah, the problem with that is, and I know what you're saying. But, dude, and even though the deal isn't what it's reported, you've paid Amari Cooper. Like, you've paid Ezekiel Elliott. You're really going to let the guy who could be your quarterback for the next 13 to 14, 15 years go?
Yeah. No, I think you have to sign him, but you're not in a good situation. Like,
question.
You're not in a good situation.
Question for you.
Yes, sir.
As a 49er fan, would you take Rain Dakota Prescott as your quarterback next season?
Sure, because I think he's a good quarterback. I mean, I'm good with Jimmy, though. Like, I'm good with Jimmy.
Question. Is Dak Prescott an upgrade over Jimmy Garoppolo?
I mean, this is going to incite, you know, a lot of people.
This feels like an easy answer to me.
I would say no.
And that's the wrong answer.
I would say no. Look, we talked about this the other day. We see all this stuff with Dak and his yards and stuff. Like, the guy's throwing 50 times a game.
That's a problem.
That's a problem, but that also, like, this has always been a thing with me and Jimmy and all this other stuff. They're like, oh, look at these quarterbacks. They're throwing 350 yards and three touchdowns because they throw 30 to 40 to 50 times a game. Jimmy is, like, lucky if he gets to 30. He's typically around 25 attempts a game.
The craziest part about that is he's throwing 50 times on a team that features Ezekiel Elliott, the highest paid running back in the entire league.
Mm.
And you still have Dak throwing there 50 times. And I guess part of it, maybe a solid strategy for the Dallas Cowboys defense would be, hey, let's not spot this team 30 points so perhaps our offense can establish some sort of rhythm. Maybe this guy who we paid a whole bunch of money to over the course of the next 5 years, maybe we could actually get him involved in the offense this week instead of having Dak to bail us out as he almost did against the Cleveland Browns and as he did do against the Atlanta Falcons.
So I would bring it back to you and present the question to you like this, because you say Dak is an upgrade.
I think Dak is an upgrade. Mm-hmm.
So we both came into the season talking about, like, what we thought Jimmy could do this year, how he could improve and be better and things of that nature. And that's with the way Kyle Shanahan runs his offense, 25 to 30 throws a game. If Jimmy was throwing 50 times a game, do you think he could put up Dak's numbers?
No.
Why not?
Because I just don't think he's that quarterback. I think Jimmy is perfect. I think Jimmy's perfect for the way that Kyle Shanahan wants to play. He's perfect. Mm-hmm. But when you get into a situation where Kyle Shanahan has talked about it, you talked about it today, the loss of Raheem Mostert. We've been talking about the loss of Raheem Mostert for over a week now.
Mm-hmm.
When you lose what made their offense so efficient last year, and that was their run game, I don't know that Jimmy Garoppolo can carry them through that. We may be on the verge of finding out. We haven't had the opportunity to find that out yet, as he only played you know, half a game after the, you know, the Cardinals loss, in which, you know, it was over the course of the next half that we lost all of those, that player after player after player after player went down in the second week of the season. But Dak, as a potential 50-throw-a-game quarterback, yeah, I think he's better at that than Jimmy Garoppolo would be.
Okay.
Maybe. I also think he can create more with his legs than Jimmy Garoppolo can. And if you're lacking a running game, that helps you against the defense. That can make a defense be honest. Now, maybe you're not gearing up for a potential, you know, Raheem Mostert, you know, spurt for 55 yards or whatever, but your run defense is being honest because, you know, at any moment, if you drop back too much, you've created space for Dak Prescott and he can make the most of it. Look, I don't think anybody fears that from Jimmy Garoppolo.
I understand, you know, people saying that that Dak is better than Jimmy. I understand it. I get it. I'm just telling you, I'm fine with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Okay.
I'm
not suggesting we ship Jimmy Garoppolo out of here.
That wasn't the topic. That wasn't what you were putting on the table. It was an honest question of, you know, hypothetically, who do you think is better?
But it was based off of what you said about how, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, can you sink all of this money into the offense when your defense is historically awful? Mm-hmm. Actually, they might not be the worst defense in the league. This is something we're going to have to look up during the commercial break, because the Seattle Seahawks still exist.
Oh, my goodness.
The difference is the Seahawks are 4-0 with that bad defense, and the Cowboys are 1-3 with their bad defense.
That's crazy. Well, I was watching something, and Jalen Rose brought up a good point, and he said, obviously, you're going to pay Dak Prescott. You got him all this stuff.
I don't think it's obvious, but go ahead.
It might not be obvious. I hear what you're saying, but if you do pay him, the only other way to get better is you got to move off Ezekiel Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I mean, we could have a top 5 running back in the game on the market available.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know the full, because Zeke's extension hasn't even kicked in.
Wow.
Like, he's still on his contract year. The extension, I don't even know. I got honest to God, I don't think the extension starts next year. Mm. I think it starts the year after that. I could be completely wrong, but I know this year he's not in an extension year. He's just in a regular year. He's making like $2 million or something like that this year. He just got a whole bunch of money when he signed that contract. He got the signing bonuses and the upfront money and, you know, the direct deposit right after, you know, the ink hit paper.
Yeah.
I don't think you can move Ezekiel Elliott, though, either. You have to build your defense. And the good thing is, if they continue at this pace, they're going to have a high draft pick. You've got to build your defense through the draft. And as much criticism as the Cowboys deserve, they've drafted relatively well since, at least by all outward appearances, Stephen Jones has taken over the drafting process. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not praising Steven, and I'm not going to praise Jerry either, but they've hit a couple of home runs on their draft picks, most notably what they've done with that offensive line, which, by the way, is getting older.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have a potential terrible defense and an aging offensive line. By the way, you lost Travis Ferguson also. That was a massive loss for them before the season starts when he retired. Now you've got two really important parts of the game that you've got to figure out a way to upgrade.
Your NFC East champion, Philadelphia Eagles.
That would be the NFC least champion, Philadelphia Eagles, with a 6-8-1 record. There's your prediction right there. 6-8-1. Does that math work out? 6-8? No, it actually doesn't. Maybe 6-8-2. 6-8-2. Let's give them another tie.
Yeah.
Let's give them another tie along the way. We'll step out. We'll come back. I have promised you that we are going to make the case. There's no quarterback controversy. There'll never be a quarterback controversy. And I think I can change your mind about Nick Mullins being a starting quarterback in this league.
Oh, come on.
We've got all of that. Plus, Isaiah Thomas?
That's you like up. Sacramento, don't you, Isaiah? Let's go.
And one-on-one here on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and Casey. D'Lo and Casey continues on ESPN 1320.
We're a finely tuned machine here on D'Lo and KC, at least in front of the camera we are. You're listening to D'Lo and KC on KIFM West Sacramento, KRXQ, HD2 Sacramento, or radio.com sports station, and driven by Lashers, Elk Grove, Dodge, the Marathon, continues here. Let's go to the phone lines, 916-349-1320. Ramsey, patiently, very, very patiently, I might add, waiting. Ramsey, what's going on, baby?
Not too much. How are you gentlemen this afternoon?
Good, man. What's up with you, bro?
Good. I got Damien, do me a favor. Cue up Kendrick Lamar, King Kunta. Kenny, okay. I got a bone to pick with what you said yesterday in 1-1 when you basically gave support to the Astros.
Wait a minute.
You know you're this Sacramento, right, with a bunch of A's fans around here. And how can you support a team that give any support to a team that we all know blatantly outright cheated, got no punishment for it, and got away with it, and they're so nonchalant about it. Granted, we all got love for Dusty. This ain't about him. It's about the players he got on his team, especially naming Altuve, Correa, Bregman, Springer. I can continue. But at the same time...
No, I would just say this, Ramsey. In a sport that celebrates cheating, that condones it, that has... I know they need to have another quote-unquote cheater in the Hall of Fame, but how many times have they rolled out Gaylord Perry and talked about how great he is, and he's in the Hall of Fame, and he admitted to doctoring the ball every chance he got? So you really want me to sit up here and condemn the Astros like they're the worst thing that ever happened to baseball?
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying they are, because if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying in baseball. But this was,
if you can steal, if you can get the signs, technology. If you can get the signs, then you can get the signs. Like, that's what the game is. And I'm not condoning what they did by no means. But, hey, they've been raked through the coals. They got that stain on them no matter what happens for the rest of their careers. All right, cool. I kind of like the fact that they're like, this is how the Astros look at it right now. They're like, all right, you guys think that we were only good because we cheated? We about to show you. We take away all our devices. Take away all our stuff. All the things you said that's why we won the World Series.
All our trash cans.
All the trash cans. Take it all away. And we about to come do some work. I was talking to my man Jason Jones about this, Ramsey, yesterday. I guarantee you, nobody is more confident that they're going to win the World Series than the Houston Astros.
I understand that, but we still got plenty of baseball left before we even come close to getting there. I mean, game two starts in about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Look, I understand why people don't like that. Don't get it twisted. I completely understand. I just see a little something to the fact of these guys that, you know, did something wrong, that weren't going by the rules of the game, and people treating them like they're trash. Like, that's the only reason why they were successful. Like, that's the only reason why they were good. We're talking about phenoms here. You know, Carlos Correa is a phenom. He's been destined for greatness since he was probably 10 years old. That is not why they are good baseball players.
I get that, but let's take a look at – I mean, you can take a look at their stats. Not just last year, but especially this year. Granted, it's a 60-game sample size. But they struggled mightily, backdoored their way into the playoffs because they were the second – they were the second team in the AL West with the record that's under 500.
Altuve's looking suspect, I will tell you that, though.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday...
Yesterday
he came on, got a couple of hits, but I still think it could have been just one game. And yesterday's game, honestly, it wasn't more what the Astros did. It was more what the A's didn't do and the mistakes the A's made that cost them the game yesterday. But like I said, clean slate. We got about 10, 15 minutes. Game two is here.
Hey, man, Ramsey, appreciate you calling. This is everybody that's upset with the Astros, especially the A's fans and their people. Look here, man, you got an opportunity to knock them out, and then you can say whatever you want. But if I'm the Astros, and after all the mess that the A's have been talking and their friends been talking or whatever, and I beat you, you're going to hear from me. If I'm the Astros, you're going to hear from me, because y'all said all year, you cheated to win and all this other stuff. If you can't knock me out right now, you about to hear from me if I'm the Houston Astros.
I personally think you should be ashamed of yourself, to be honest. The Astros winning yesterday shouldn't be a surprise. They've won seven straight game ones in the division series dating back to 2004 when they were in the National League. What? How is that a stat? That is a real thing. And it was a phenomenal performance. I actually enjoyed baseball. I know you're a Yankees household there in Elk Grove, and okay.
It's 2 days in a row where you said that. Just calm down. Once again, this is a Giants house. Don't let the queen bee fool you. All right, I got love for the Yankees. I support the Bronx Bombers, but don't get it twisted. It's orange and black at this household.
Okay, you keep telling yourself that, big guy. The Yankees, I enjoy them. Like they're. When you win the way that they do and you hit the ball the way that they do, it's entertaining. And they're all or nothing. That's what I said yesterday. It's why I get a kick out of this team. They're either great, unstoppable, they're going to the World Series, or they're in the midst of a 10-game losing streak and I'm laughing at them. Either way, the Yankees will entertain me.
I like the Bronx Bombers, man, especially this crew that they got right now. My man Aaron Judge, my man G. Carlo, you know what I'm saying? I'm with these guys.
31 runs through three postseason games.
Mm.
They're drinking whatever the NFL is serving up in their offense, and we'll explain that reference coming up here in just a minute. Baseball playoffs continue here today, as you heard our resident. I love that the people who listen to this show get us, and they drop Kendrick Lamar lines to start their
phone
call.
Got a bone to pick.
That the warmth that brings over me is just immeasurable. So I told you at the beginning of today's show that I think I can convince you that your assessment on Nick Mullins is wrong. We're waiting to hear, and we're not going to hear today from Kyle Shanahan. We're not going to hear about the status of Jimmy Garoppolo. We're not going to get the 49ers quarterback depth chart if Jimmy Garoppolo can't go. We're not going to know who's getting the first team reps or all of that stuff until tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to bring you all of that information tomorrow. So I thought I would look into this a little bit after hearing what Kyle Shanahan said last night and do a slightly like a deep dive into, okay, what was Nick Mullins as a quarterback? Who was C.J. Beathard as a quarterback? We saw C.J. Beathard come in and he lit it up in that fourth quarter. Like, all right, cool. You and I have both said, you know, Nick Mullins is a very capable quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you said he's a starting quarterback in this league. All right. Let's dive into this a little bit. Everybody remembers the performance that Nick Mullins had a couple of years ago against the then Oakland Raiders, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, the Oakland Raiders finished 4-12 that year.
Yeah, they were terrible.
They got another win that year. They beat Denver. They beat Denver 20-14. The Broncos that year finished 6-10. The most notable win in that 2018 season from when Nick Mullins was the win against the hated Seattle Seahawks. The Seahawks that year finished 10-6. He played the second half versus the Jets, and he beat the Giants, arguably the two worst teams in the league so far this year.
Okay.
He's played 12 games in his career, Kenny. Mm-hmm. He started 10. Played 12, started 10. He has 15 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, 25 sacks, and 5 fumbles. Those are the career statistics for one Nick Mullins. Well, that's why we got to go with C.J. Beathard. Did you see what C.J. Beathard did against the Philadelphia Eagles and their terribly, terribly, terribly depleted defense?
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at C.J. Beathard here. He is 1-9 in his 10 games as a starter. I say that to you again, partner. He is 1-9.
You ain't got to repeat it to me.
With 12 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, 38 sacks to the tune of 3 football fields lost. 38 sacks, 306 yards lost in those sacks. Those are your current quarterbacks for the San Francisco 49ers.
Well, I was all ears.
I want to stall before you go too far. I'm going to stall C.J. Beathard out just a smidge.
You're going to stall C.J. Beathard out, not Nick Mullins?
Because C.J. Beathard played on a trash 49ers team. Absolute trash 49ers team.
Damien, you know you messed up, right? You know you messed up, right?
Menace to Society reference for those who are unaware, but go ahead.
You know they played in the same season, right?
No, he couldn't have played 10 games in 2018.
He didn't play in 2018. Or excuse me, he didn't play 10 games in 2018. Bethard played.
Didn't he
maybe
play the
five
year?
Or six games in 2018?
Didn't
and
he play
was
the year?
Garbage.
Didn't he play the year they traded for Jimmy?
Wasn't he played CJ that? Bethard he played that year. He played that year, and when Jimmy got hurt, he started until Mullins got hurt or came in.
Okay.
And was terrible.
So they were both on trash teams.
They were both on. That was my biggest argument. Is Nick played that 2018 team? By the time they got to that game, with the injuries that they had and things of that nature, they were no good. Absolutely no good. Now, Nick Mullins, like I said, we just talked about earlier in the show, at the beginning of the show, a guy that had 9 interceptions in 2 games. So you telling me that Nick is 15 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, that don't do nothing mm-hmm. for me. He can play in the NFL. He's a starter in the NFL because, like I said, we got guys out here throwing 9 interceptions in 2 weeks. All right, we got guys that set your clock by it. Every fourth week of the season is going to have a 3 interception game. All right, so he can definitely play in the NFL. C.J. Beathard, on the other hand, I've seen enough of him. He's no good. He's no good. And I don't know why. I don't know why last year, and I definitely didn't know why this year, he was even on the roster. Like, that was a complete miss by Kyle Shanahan. He has no business being on this roster. I've seen enough of him. And if you get into a situation where this week Jimmy's not ready to go again, to me, there is no quarterback controversy. You start Nick Mullins. Simple as that. I know CJ came in. He did fine. He did really well when he came in on Sunday. Good for him. He can put that tape on and have somebody else look to pick him up. He don't need to be starting no games over here.
If Nick Mullins is starting Sunday, they're losing. 49ers are losing on Sunday if Nick Mullins is the starter. I'm not confident the 49ers are winning if Jimmy Garoppolo is the starter.
If Jimmy plays, they win. I'll tell you that now.
All right.
If Jimmy plays, they win. If Nick plays and doesn't turn the ball over, they win again. I mean, all of it is on turnovers.
But just throwing out the line, if he doesn't turn the ball over, isn't enough. Like, he turns the ball over. He turns the ball over at damn near the same rate he throws touchdown passes.
Well, he didn't turn the ball over against the Giants.
He has 15 touchdowns and 13 interceptions in his career.
So he's going to turn it over.
Okay.
Eventually, he's going to turn it over.
Kenny, I'm sorry. He didn't turn the ball over against the worst team in the league. I'm sorry. You're 100%
correct.
He didn't
turn the ball over.
If
we're going against for his whole career, the Seattle Seahawks, I think they won the NFC West that year he played in 2018. He won that game.
That's what I said. I gave that to him.
So, I mean, he's capable of not turning the ball over. Once again. Not to keep raking the coals over this guy. It's not like he's throwing 6 interceptions in a game.
No, that is Ryan Fitzpatrick who does that.
No, and look, I understand those are very compelling numbers. I still think Nick is a starter in this league. Now, if he's a starter, how good are you going to be?
Fascinating.
That's a whole nother question. That's a whole nother question. But I think he's a starter in this league.
Fascinating, because there are people who agree with you. 100%. And they should. And there are people who agree with you. The quarterback before either one of them threw 16 touchdowns and 4 interceptions and never saw a football field again because he apparently wasn't good enough to play in the NFL. But I'll just leave that out there for the world today.
And he played with maybe the worst coach. Him and Jimmy Chamtula. Those are two of the worst coaches maybe in 49ers history.
Dennis Erickson and who? Oh, yeah.
And Chip
Dennis
Kelly.
Erickson. Oh, my gosh. Chip Kelly.
That's who Cat played for, Chip Kelly.
Oh,
2-14 Kelly. That year.
So bad. I heard Chip Kelly's going to reinvent the NFL. I remember the first half of that game. Was it Philadelphia, right? Philadelphia versus Washington.
Yeah.
That first half, ESPN was falling all over itself. Never saw it again. Yeah. Never. Saw that pace, that Oregon pace of play. Never happened again.
That Niners team that Chip Kelly had, that Cap got his last opportunity with, they lost 13 straight games. They won the first game of the season, lost the next 13, and won the next to last game of the season against the Rams again to finish 2-14. Garbage.
Damian Burling, Kenny Carraway, four topics, two arguments, no winners. One-on-one with D'Lo and KC.
Resident Rams fan is fact-checking everything we say. The Seahawks finished second in the division that year, Kenny, to the Rams. Jamal, oh. I want you to know that the Rams won the division.
That's right. That year. That's right. They didn't win the division that year.
Javon wants the Rams. Javon Stallworth wants his Rams to get his respect. He wants them to get their respect.
They deserve all the respect in the world for that putrid performance they put together in that Super Bowl. Respect to them. Embarrassing performance in the Super Bowl.
Bam Adebayo is going to play tonight. Feel like we should throw that out there. That's
good for Bam. Yeah.
Okay, let me rephrase it. Let me rephrase it in its proper context from Adrian Wojnarowski. Bam Adebayo is planning to return tonight. So I feel like it might be one of those situations where it's like, all right, we got one. Let's go out there and see how it goes.
Yeah.
And Eric Spoelstra will monitor it pretty closely from there.
Well, I mean, they got me watching here. This is the last NBA basketball, you know, this week that we'll be seeing for, you know, some months. So I'm watching. I'm checking it out. We'll see what kind of performance that he can put up tonight.
We don't even know when we're going to see basketball again. That's the wild part. We gotta say goodbye, and we don't know when we're going to see you again.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Tough.
Brutal, brutal, brutal. Hey, let's start with this one. We do it every single Tuesday. Biggest surprise of week four.
Biggest surprise of week four for me? Oh, man. You go first.
I love that every week this question surprises you.
I'm going back and forth here.
like we just get on the air and this question just hits you out of nowhere.
It's the one that gets me every time. You go first. Tell me who your biggest surprise is real quick, man, because I got one, but I actually have one, but I was trying to come up with something maybe a little less obvious. But go ahead. You go first.
So it's more of a shame on me type situation. It's the Green Bay Packers. Again, we joked about this leading into the season. They were 13-3 last year, and everybody was kind of like, okay, like whatever. And part of it is, you know, the way that they lost in the postseason. Like, it was just, you know, they were 13-3. And it, like, you hear, Matt LaFleur, how is this all going to work? And they've won four more. They look phenomenal. And Aaron Rodgers is walking with a very... Like, he got his cocky-ass chest puffed out. Like, he said something to Pat McAfee earlier today about, like, people's career years are my worst seasons. Okay. Like,
dive down that rabbit hole of Aaron Rodgers.
We've got that Aaron Rodgers. Like, all right, I'm with it. But how do you knock him? They beat up the Falcons yesterday, 30-16. Again, they're 4-0 right now. It's his 17th career game with 300 passing yards and four touchdowns. It's fourth most, in the NFL. He just passed Dan Marino. He has 13 touchdowns this season without an interception. He's playing. I mean, we have fun with our power rankings every week. If we did MVP power rankings, I got Russell Wilson at the top. Aaron Rodgers can't be far behind. I know Josh Allen's in the conversation, but Aaron Rodgers is too. And
absolutely.
I regularly looked past them all off season.
Yeah,
and I don't know why. I just did.
Well, because they were soft as wet toilet paper tissue last year, and they got curb stomped by the Niners twice. That's why you overlooked them. And we'll see what happens this year. They look good this year. They're number two on my power rankings. They look good.
I didn't overlook them because they got curb stomped twice. I overlooked them because they got curb stomped when it mattered the most.
Yeah.
You whatever happens in the regular season is whatever. You go to play them a second time, and it happens again. That's probably why I forgot about them. But again, dude,
fair
they
enough.
Were 13-3.
Yeah, fair enough. And look, if we're going to play that game right now, I can easily make the argument that they've played nobody this year. Absolutely nobody. They played the Lions, the Vikings, the Falcons, and the Saints.
Well, the Saints aren't nobody, but you play the teams that are in front of you.
That's all you can do. That's what they did last year too, and we see where it got them. So that's all you can do, and we'll evaluate them. But look, I say that saying though, Damien, like that was one of the teams I was going back and forth with here. Like, I was like, man, I am kind of, you know, surprised that they're 4-0. I'm surprised that they're doing what they're doing. But that's not the biggest surprise to me. I finally decided it's the Cleveland Browns. It's the Cleveland Browns, 3-1. 3-1.
I'm sorry?
The Cleveland Browns at 3-1. That is a surprise
to
me. Yeah.
Look
now,
at you.
Once again, I take nothing back about what I said about the quarterback. Like I said, he scored almost 50 points. He had 160 yards.
It's not his fault. It's not
like, no, it's not his credit either. It ain't to his credit either. All right? So I still feel how I feel about him. But he hasn't been a complete scrub. I guess that's a compliment I'll give him. He hasn't been a complete scrub this year. He's made some good plays, had some good moments. Shout out to him.
I hope that's on your Christmas card to me this year. You know, you haven't been a complete scrub this year. And you go, what? It was totally complimentary. Like, what do you mean? But you haven't been a complete scrub.
But look, they're getting
compliments
the ball to
from Kenny Caraway.
That's the compliment. That's the best compliment I can give Baker Mayfield. But they're getting the ball to Odell Beckham. He's making plays. And they're 3-1. We talk all the time about the NFC West being the best division in football and all this other stuff, and the AFC West and all this. AFC North has a 3-0 team, a 3-1 team, and a 3-1 team. So, you know, and they're part of that. So,
yeah. Hey,
got to tip my hat to them. And they're the biggest surprise that I got so far after week four.
Fair enough. Before you jump in, I'm going to use the name defensive tackle Bill Murray. Everyone knows the comedian Bill Murray. Defensive tackle Bill Murray. The name doesn't mean anything to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Unless you're in New England. And I'm guessing you're not listening in New England. But if you are, welcome to the program.
They
I'm Damian Barling.
Yeah,
it's Kenny Caraway. I point this out because he's a Patriots practice squad member who has been placed on the reserve COVID-19 list.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to point out an Adam Schefter tweet that went out this morning that everyone who was tested in the traveling party for the New England Patriots, they were all tested yesterday morning. They got the test back this morning.
Mm-hmm.
You're not catching on to what I'm saying. They were all tested yesterday morning.
He went to Kansas City?
They traveled. All members of the New England Patriots travel party were tested before getting on a plane and traveling to Kansas City. The results for the test came back this morning.
That doesn't make any sense. How can you, if you have a COVID scare and all this other stuff, how can you get on a plane and move forward before you have the results of the test?
Thank you.
That doesn't make any sense.
And the NFL has already said that they're looking into a violation of protocols. How is it? I couldn't figure out how they were able to delay the game only 24 hours after their quarterback. I said this to you before the show. There was a line, Steve Levy, and I think most people have already tuned him out of Monday Night Broadcast, but it caught my attention. He was talking about a conversation he had with Brian Hoyer. And Brian Hoyer was sitting at his house out on the deck and all of this stuff. Because remember, the Patriots didn't leave until yesterday morning. They talked to him on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And he insinuated that him and Cam Newton hadn't been near each other. And I was fascinated by that because I was thinking, okay, are they conducting like their quarterback meetings through Zoom, or is this just a line that they're telling the public to skew this NFL investigation? Of course, it's the Patriots. You've got to think the worst, right?
Right.
That they're
right.
trying to – I was so – I'm like the Patriot quarterbacks, and I'm curious. I'd love for somebody, whoever is listening to this, to ask Kyle Shanahan the same thing. Are quarterbacks kept apart like the vice president and the president? Like in case an attack happens, like you don't get them both, right? So you've got a safe quarterback. You've got a safe leader somewhere.
That would actually make perfect sense for them to do that.
But this is literally the first time that I've heard it. Mm. But because it came from the Patriots, I immediately thought, well, they're full of crap.
Well,
they're trying to dodge this investigation that's coming at them.
There's a lot of cap going on, and for those that don't know, that means lies. Cap is lies. All right, there's a lot of cap going on, and with the NFL, with all these, you know, strong memos, and you want to fine people and all this other stuff. There's a lot of fake hustle going on, if you ask me. Because once again, how are you so strict on everything? And you don't have your mask down to call plays, so we're fining you $10,000, $250,000, whatever the case may be. And then you let a game go on before you get the results of the test. You don't really care. Like, it's fake hustle, man. It's fake hustle. All you care about is getting these games off. You do not care about COVID and all this. I'm saying it. They don't care. They about getting these games off. Fake hustle.
It's worth mentioning this, too, for those who missed it. The player, the defensive tackle, the Bill Murray, the defensive tackle who went on the COVID list from the Patriots, he's a practice squad player. I'm guessing he wasn't near Cam Newton. That's just a guess on my part. I don't know, but I'm guessing he wasn't. The Patriots, they've got a problem here.
Yeah.
And the NFL was like, this is a Monday nighter. This is the Chiefs and the Patriots. Like, we could put this off to a Monday night, but we can't put this off for weeks.
And in the same breath, they're like, Patriots, we're going to investigate you strong because there's some crazy stuff going on. No, crazy stuff is going on in the NFL. Yeah. That's where the crazy stuff is going on. Because you guys sitting up here want to have these strong-worded emails, yet once again, we'll mention it. Damian mentioned it. I'll mention it again. You played the game before you got the results of the test.
You traveled. Like, you got on two different planes. It's so fascinating. And the fact that this was released publicly. Like, I wouldn't have known that the test didn't come back until the next day if Adam Schefter hadn't tweeted it. Like, who slipped up and told Schefter that?
Look, man, just because you got a job title and you're in certain places, that don't mean you're the sharpest knife in the tool when it comes to this stuff, man. Like, they got a lot of dumb people in high places.
NFL ain't going to make it, bro. I don't think NFL is going
to
make it.
Oh, they going to make it. They going to force their way to make it. That is for sure. They're going to make sure that they make it.
Maybe they'll they're awfully close with the guy who leads the way here. Maybe, you know, if you stop testing, you don't get any positive test. NFL will do that.
That is the answer to all our problems.
Can't test positive if you don't test at all.
We'll come back to the NFL in just a second, but let me slide over to the NBA here. And Isaiah Thomas, not that Isaiah Thomas, this generation's Isaiah Thomas. He is 5 months removed from a hip resurfacing procedure, and the two-time NBA All-Star guard is charting course for the 2020-2021 season, armed with the visual and data evidence that he is now a much stronger candidate to contribute to an NBA roster as a bench scorer. He said, quote, "It's like night and day for me. There's no more pain. I've got my full range of motion. For 3 years, I was trying to play the best players in the world on one leg. I needed help for my kids to put my socks on in the morning," end quote. So Isaiah Thomas says he feels good. He said he feels great. He's ready for next season. I'm going to keep it local. Do the Sacramento Kings need to make a phone call?
Do they need to? No. I mean, I'd love Isaiah Thomas to be here. First and foremost, I'd love Isaiah Thomas to be productive in the NBA again.
Mm-hmm.
But do I see the... No, I don't. I don't see the Kings making a call for this. No,
I think they absolutely need to.
Why?
I think they absolutely need to. I mean, scoring off the bench was not their strong suit.
But do you think he can still do that? Like, you're open to just try
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's worth a look.
Why not? I mean,
yeah, bring him in. I mean, you had Yogi Ferrell on the roster last year. You know what I mean? Why not bring in Isaiah Thomas?
I'm a Yogi guy.
I like Yogi, but
he didn't get any run.
Yogi was no good last year, and I like Yogi.
He didn't play last year.
When he played, it was no good. Like, he wasn't good last year.
Well, I think it's hard to go 6 days, 6 games without playing, and then it's like, oh, Yogi, go play 12 minutes today.
Maybe so, but I mean, that's also part of being in the NBA.
I guess, in that particular role,
that's part of it. You know what I mean? That's what you got to be ready for. If you're called upon to come in there and give 12 good minutes when you haven't played for 2 weeks, you got to give 12 good minutes. Mm-hmm. Else you're not going to have a job. You know what I'm saying? So that's just what it is. And he didn't shine in that role. So bring him in that role. And who knows, if he's got it back, maybe he takes up the full backup point guard slot. I just think they need scoring off the bench, and what better way? It's going to be a cheap option, you know, and it's a low risk, super high reward. If he's able to come off and get to a point where he's able to give you 12 points a game off the bench, 12, 13, 14 points a game off the bench, absolutely. Absolutely. If he's right, he's a guaranteed bucket. He's a scoring machine if he's right. He is a scoring machine. I'm not saying he's going back to 30 points a game, but even if he's at like 75% of who he used to be, that's an easy 12 to 14 points a game off the bench.
I'm all for trying it. One, I hope he gets better offers than like a couple bucks offers. That's a, like, I hope he gets a, an offer to actually contribute to a team. Mm-hmm. I just, man, Boston, that, how long ago was that? Like, that was several years ago. And at this point, several surgeries ago. And man, I've just reading each time I read about Isaiah Thomas, like my heart hurts a little for him. I don't know this, but I sure hope there were some people in that Boston organization that were fired. Because it sounds like there was a whole lot handled wrong medically when it comes to Isaiah Thomas. Because this just doesn't add up. Like, this dude was this dude was out there playing with a completely jacked up hip. But I hope I hope he gets a shot.
Let me ask
you. And if it's here, great. I just hope in general he gets a shot.
Let me ask you a quick question, because I really like Isaiah Thomas. Love Isaiah Thomas. And I'm not a fan of the Boston Celtics at all. We talked about this at length. I just not, that's not my cup of tea. I don't like the Celtics. I don't like nothing in Boston. People get on Danny Ainge and the Celtics for what they did as far as trading him when, you know, it looked like he had a really bad hip, and they're like, oh, there's no loyalty in sports. How could you do something like that? Do you think they should have done something differently? Just being real with yourself. So you're going to give this guy a max contract when you know what the deal is.
No. Like, wasn't it? Was it Isaiah for Kyrie?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that what it was? No. I don't know how you don't do that. Like, if you're Boston, if you're Danny Ainge. But those two statements aren't mutually exclusive. No. There are no loyalty in sports, and there shouldn't be, not from a player's side and not from a management side. You all know that going in. Everybody knows that going in. You know that when you go buy your favorite player's jersey for you, or you go buy your favorite player's jersey for your son, you know that there's a possibility by next season this player isn't going to be on the team anymore.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think everybody has to approach sports like that, and maybe there'd be less venom towards professional athletes if we all recognized, yeah, there is no loyalty from anybody's perspective. My concern with the Celtics, though, is they knew a lot and didn't do anything to fix it or didn't do anything to address it. They just looked at it as, hey, we've got an opportunity here to potentially win a championship. Let's get through this and deal with it later. And I'm not saying Isaiah Thomas would have had it any other way. Not saying that at all. This is a dude who we saw play through just unimaginable
steak, man.
We saw him play
mentally
through
physically
unimaginable heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm a fan. I don't know anyone in this market that's not a fan of Isaiah Thomas. So yeah.
That was just
a
messed up situation, like all the way around. Like, and I'm not so quick to be like Danny Ainge and the Celtics they're just terrible for what they did. Like, it just was a messed up situation. And I don't think there was any great way to come out of that. That's realistic.
And I know a lot of people don't care about stuff like this, but think about how good he was, and he never got that deal. He never got paid.
Yeah, that sucks. That really does. He deserved it, too.
Scoring is up in the NFL. We alluded to that just a little bit ago, and not by a little, up by quite a bit. The previous high of scoring points total, like the over-under, if you will, 48.1 points per game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this year, that was in 2018. This year, it's up to 51.3.
My goodness.
Simple question. Why? Why is scoring up so much?
Somebody brought this up, I think, on our show, and it might have been Biederman. I can't remember. I apologize to whoever brought up the point, but I think they're exactly right. No fans. No fans has created this scrimmage-like environment where basically, like, if we're just being real with ourselves, like, the offense knows where they're going to go, defense doesn't know. It's always a guessing game, right? So with no other elements involved, like fans or being it crowd noise, things of that nature, play calls, you know, snap counts, all this other stuff, with none of that being a factor no more, and it's just offense versus defense, offense should win every time, to be honest with you. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. No fans is a big issue to that, in my opinion.
Okay. Alternate theory from ESPN Stats and Info. There's no way to prove this, but they say that there is a large decrease in the number of flags thrown per game, particularly a substantial decline in offensive holding. And that has contributed to offenses being out there on the field longer, thus racking up more points.
Well, they started that last year in the Super Bowl. That's when they started to stop calling offensive holding.
You know, the funny part, that's accurate. that's not even bitter Kenny Caraway talking right there.
Oh, it's still bitter, actually, though.
No, I know that. I know that. I was trying to saw you out there a little bit. I remember. Remember there was, what was the other call? There was like, I don't remember if it was pass interference or there was some call that was happening over and over and over and over again during a game and during a stretch of the season. And then all of a sudden, I think Tom Brady complained about it on Twitter. Like he was watching Thursday Night Football, and I can't remember what the specific call was. And then all of a sudden, it disappeared. It wasn't called anymore.
These referees in all sports are just gutless.
Oh, that's not referees, dude. That came from the league.
Yeah, gutless.
If Tom Brady is tweeting about his sport that he plays being boring on a Thursday night because of the amount of certain particular calls being made, the NFL got on top of that. And you saw there was a substantial decline the rest of the season after Brady tweeted that.
Gutless. Last but not least here, Damon, you know I love me a good NBA trade scenario, possible trade scenario, anything. This latest one has, real quick, Paul George, his exit interview did not go well, according to sources with the Los Angeles Clippers. And the Clippers are looking to move on, which I said they should be doing after they got bounced in the second round. One source says, my source would not be shocked if Paul George was shipped out of town and the potential landing spot is the Brooklyn Nets. Are you buying that?
Wow. That sounds like something planted by his agent. That absolutely sounds something planted by his agent. We're going to talk a lot of NBA tomorrow because we've got the NBA Finals tonight. We're going to talk about the Sacramento Kings tomorrow, and then we'll have an update on the 49ers and their practice. We appreciate you so much for being with us. I'm Damian Barling. He's Kenny Caraway. Damon Rattle and Kolsky are coming up next here on ESPN 1320.